One mem zayin amud aleph, beginning the fifth parak of Yoma. Continuing with the Kohen Gadol's avodah and kippur, the last thing we said was that he took a pan full of coals from the mizbeach hachitza, and we said there was a special wood pile set up for that on Yom Kippur, which led us into a whole discussion about the wood piles. So now he has the coals. Now he needs the other part, the ketores. So the Mishnah says, "Hotziu lo yisakach v'samachta." They brought out for him from the lishkas hakelim. There was a chamber in the Bais HaMikdash where they kept the various kelim they needed. So they brought out for him a spoon and a shovel. Now we'll see in the Gemara what's the shovel for. He already has the shovel full of coal. So we'll see in the Gemara. Chofan maloy chofnav. He took a double handful of ketores. So in other words, he cupped his hands together in the ketores and took out a double handful. The nos on the secha kaf and put that ketores into the spoon. Hagadol fi godloi. A larger kohen gadol would have a larger handful. Hakatan fi kotne. A smaller kohen gadol would have a smaller one. You know, we say in Peter Machtodus, we mention that achas l'shishim l'shivim shana hoisavar shal shirayim l'chatzoyim. We say that once every 60 or 70 years, the leftover from each year would amount to a full half of the amount they needed of ketores for that year, and then therefore that year they'd prepare only a half of that. So why 60 or 70 years? So earlier we say that there's shloshim monim yaseirim, that they made 368 mana of ketores, 365 are for the days of the year. They have three extra mana from which the Kohen Gadol would take out the double handful on Yom Kippur. So now, depending on the size of the Kohen Gadol's hands, there would be a surplus. And over the years, that surplus would build up. So 60 or 70 years, because it depends on what the average size of the Kohen Gadol's hands was during those years, then eventually you'd have enough would accumulate that you'd have 184 mana. But that's what we mean over here. In other words, there was no fixed amount. However, whatever size the Kohen Gadol's hands were, that's the size, that's the amount of ketores that would be brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. V'chach hoisa midasa, that was its measurement. What that phrase means, we're going to discuss in the Gemara. So, notal samach to be mina, v'sa kaf b'smolai. So the Kohen Gadol takes the pan full of coals in his right hand, and he takes the spoon of ketores in his left hand, and starts walking towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, machta? What do you mean they bring out a machta for him? Tonalei, we already heard the previous peric. Not also machta, but olo l'resh ha-mizbeach. He took a shovel, a scoop, and went up to the top of the mizbeach, v'choseh, and he scooped up coals, v'yoded, and he came down. So he already has the scoop. What are they getting him now? The answer is the difference is there we're talking about a scoop that he used to scoop up coals from the mizbeach. The hocha machta de ketores, here we're talking about a pan full of ketores from which he's going to do the chafina. It's going to be a container full of ketores, and in it he's going to put his hands into that and take the double handful.
Don't you think you should take the ketores in the right hand and the coal in the left hand? Because the ketores.
Very good. The Gemara is going to mention that point. But first, let's deal with what the Mishnah means with the machta. So the answer is it means a machta of ketores. So they'd fill up a pan full of ketores, and they would, and then the Kohen Gadol would take the double handful out of it. Tosfos Hashanim points out it's not like usually ketores would be brought inside the machta. Only on Yom Kippur, and also we find in the story of Korach and the 250 men that we have that ketores was brought inside a machta. Usually, when ketores is brought every day, they spread the coal on the mizbeach hazahav directly, and then they put the ketores on top of that. So the machta we're talking about over here is where he's going to take the double handful of ketores out of. The Tanya, we learn in a brisa, hotziu like kaf reikon milishkas hakelim. They brought out for him an empty spoon from the lishkas hakelim. Umachta gedusha shok ketores milishkas beis aptinas, and they brought him a full heaping machta full of ketores from lishkas beis aptinas, where we've learned previously that beis aptinas was the family in the Bais HaMikdash that made the ketores. They had a lishka, they had an office in the Bais HaMikdash where they prepared the ketores. So now they took a machta full of ketores from there and brought it to the Kohen Gadol. The point being, in other words, that therefore the machta of our Mishnah the Machta in the first line of the Mishnah and the last line are actually two different ones. The one in the first Mishnah is what he scooped, the one in the first line of the Mishnah is what he scooped Ktoras out of, the one in the last line of the Mishnah is what he had the cold in. So now comes your question. We said Chofan Maloy Chofnav. We said he took a double handful from it, the Nosan Lasecha Kaf, and puts the Ktoras into the spoon. A Godol if he Godol, a Kotn if he Kotno. If he's large, then it's a larger amount. If he's small, then it's a smaller amount. And that was its measurement. So what does that mean? So we have to ask, first of all, before we even get to right versus left. Right versus left, actually, we're going to get to later on in the Gemara, on Daphnem Test. On Daphnem Test, we're going to get to the question, why is he carrying the well, actually, no, we're going to get to it further down on, on our Amud. Later on, the Gemara is going to revisit that. The Gemara is going to mention over here briefly why we do that after we deal with something else first, why we have a spoon in the first place. But then the Gemara is going to revisit that on Daf Mem Tes and say, one second, isn't Avoida always supposed to be done with the right hand? But anyway, so first, so Kaf Biyam Kippurim Lomali, why Bechlal do we need a spoon on Yom Kippur? After all, Maloy Chofna Vehevi Amarachmana, the Pasuk says that he should take a double handful and bring it in. So Lechora, that means that he should be bringing it in his hands. Who said anything about a spoon? So the answer is Mishum Dolay Efsher, because there's no way to accomplish that. Gehechi Nebid, because how should he do it? Na'ayo Vahodur Na'ayo, should he first bring in the cold and then the Keturus, or vice versa? Can't. The Pasuk says that he has to go in one time for the Ktoras. Later on, he goes in other times for the blood of the par and the sur. Fine, but as far as Ktoras, he's only supposed to be bringing in once, not twice. So he can't be bringing in one and then going out and bringing in the other one. So he can't do that. Should we do Nishkala the Ktoras b'chofnav? Should we say that he'll take the Ktoras in his hands, in his cupped hands, the Nechse l'machta Allah, and he'll put the machta on top of the pile of Ktoras on his hands, the Leil, and he'll go in? Fine, conceivably that could work as until he gets there. But Kimati Hosim, but when he reaches there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Heichi Levid, then how should he do it? How is he supposed to get the pan off his hands, if both of his hands are underneath it? Nishkala Vishine, should we say that he should take the tip of the machta in his teeth, the nechsele machta, and then put it down and then use his mouth to put it down on the floor? It's not respectful. You don't even do such a thing in front of a human king. It would be grossly disrespectful to act that way. How much more so before Melech Malchay Amlocham HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you don't do that. You have to put down the pan normally, not grab it with your teeth and put it down. So Hilkach Lo Yafshir. So there's really no way to do it. In a way that's going to be workable without having the Ktoras in a spoon. The Kivin Deloy Efsher, so given that it's not really possible, Avdinin could Ashkhan Nesiim, then we do it as we find by the Nesiim. We find a precedent by the Nesiim where they brought Kaf Achas Asorah Zahav Meloy Ktoras, as we had in last week's parasha. So they brought their Ktoras in spoons. So from there, we have a precedent that if necessary, Ktoras can be brought in a spoon. And therefore, that's how they did it over here. So there is Tosfos discusses that later on we are going to actually find that the Kohen does use his mouth, because later on you have eventually in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, according to one opinion anyway, we're going to discuss it in the Gemara, he has to get the Ktoras from the spoon back into his cupped hands, and there one possibility is that he has to use his mouth to rotate the spoon. But Tosfos says, okay, basically over there, it's not like the spoon is hanging in the air. It's in his hands. He's just using his mouth to turn it a little bit this way or that. So therefore, it's not so disrespectful as it would be over here, where he has to hold the whole machta edge of the machta in his mouth, and then there's nothing else supporting it while he's putting it down. Tosfos then asks also, why don't you have, make the mach to have a really, really long handle, and that way he'll be able to, just get his hands close to the floor and get his hands from underneath, and the mach will sit on the floor. And Tosfos gives a couple of reasons. One of them is, again, that it would be disrespectful. And another one is that if you did that, then inevitably some of the coals are going to scatter, and we can't have that. It has to be a mach full of coals. Different mafarshim talk about different other possibilities. One thing I haven't seen anybody suggest, which I don't know why they didn't do, why didn't they make that the machta itself has maybe like a hollowed out area inside it, in the handle of it, where they could put the spoon on top of that, and that way he could be carrying the calf, and that way he could be carrying the machta with the calf on top of it. So I don't know. All right.
The machta should not be covered, shouldn't it?
The machta, actually, we learned the other day that according to Ben Hasgan, we said the machta had a niyashtik, and we had a few different explanations what a niyashtik is. One of them, Tosfos had brought an explanation that it means a cover, that the machta had a cover in order that the coals don't cool off too fast. And another explanation was that it was a leather sleeve to keep the heat away from his hand. Nevertheless, it's still, when he carried into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, not necessarily was the cover still on. He may well have taken it into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the cover already off.
Okay.
The Mishnah had said, not also machta b'yamin v'es hakaf b'smol. He'd take the machta in his right hand and the calf in his left hand. So the Gemara asks, what's the logic? Yatsiva ba'arav yirav shmei shmaya. Is it right that the citizen, the native-born person, should be down on the ground and the ger should be on the highest heights? The expression actually comes from Targum on a pasuk in the Teichacha. Hager asher b'kirbecha yala alecha mala mala. The ger will be higher and you'll be lower. But in other words, the Gemara uses it sometimes as a figure of speech. Like, what's the logic that the more important thing should be given less importance? Here, the k'todas is the main thing, because he's going in there to offer k'todas. The coals are just a necessary prerequisite for it. So why are the coals in his right hand? The answer is zuma ruba v'zumu etis. The difference is there's a lot more coals than there are k'todas. It's a heavy thing. We said that he's carrying 3 kavim of coals, which is about 9 pounds, plus you have to add the weight to the machta itself. Now, granted, okay, we said they made the machta with thinner walls, so it's not as heavy, but it still weighs something. So that's much heavier, therefore he needs to carry it in his stronger hand. And even if you have both of them are equal, like the example of Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis, which we're going to say in a second, that he had very large hands, still you also have the difference that the coals are hot and the k'todas is cold, and therefore that would be another reason, even if they're equal in size, or even as Tosfos Hashanim says, the Gemara is going to explain in a second, that Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis' hands were very, very large, and therefore the amount of his double handful of k'todas was even larger than the amount of coals. But still, the fact is the coals are hot, and therefore he needs to carry them in his right hand, which is it's easier to carry them that way. There is a different gears over here. Hagoy Sabach takes out the word zuchama bazutzanenes, which means that the Gemara is just giving one answer. That the fact is the vast majority of time you have more coals than k'todas. And if it happens one time, you have an unusually large kohen gadol like Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis, still we're not going to change the usual practice. Okay. How much could Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis handle? Amru olavar Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis, shayachofen abbas kabin b'mloy chofnav. He was able to take a double handful that held 4 kabin. Now, a calf being about 3 pounds, then you're talking about he's holding in his 2 cupped hands, he's holding 12 pounds of k'todas. So he's an unusually large and strong person. The Omer, and he used to say about himself, Kol hanoshim zordu, all other women zordu, and we'll see in a second what the word zordu means. The zered ima ola lagag. My mother Zered went up to the roof, in other words, overcame and was better than all of them. So what is Zered? Ikad Ami Ba'arsan. One version is, one explanation is, that Zered refers to what's also called arsan, which is a cereal made out of, it's a cereal or porridge or something made out of cracked wheat. Rashi mentions over here, Gemara, in Brachos, that mentions that Zered is where you grind the wheat and each kernel is broken into four pieces. And then arsan is slightly finer than that. Each one is broken into five pieces. So it's good. It's a good food for people who are sick or people who are pregnant. So according to this version, Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis is saying that all other women, when they're pregnant, they eat Zered. But my mother's Zered outweighed and overcame them all, and she became much stronger than most other pregnant women, and therefore she had a son who's a large physical specimen like me. As we find what Rabbi Bar Yonason says, our son is good for a sick person. So he's praising the quality of the our son that his mother ate while she was pregnant with him. Now it's true, and Marsha points out, Zered and our son were based on what Rashi is saying over here are not the identical thing, because Zered is slightly coarser than our son, but still he could be using it in a bit of a looser sense. Anyway, Marsha brings also the fact is that the Oruch has a couple of other explanations what Zered is. The Ikka de Amri b'Shichvas Zera. Another explanation is that Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis is referring to the Shichvas Zera that went into making him in the first place. And therefore, so he's saying, in other words, that the best of it was used to form me, and therefore I became a very physically strong and large person. As Rabbi Abahu points out, that within the Shichvas Zera, the baby is not formed from all of it, only from the best parts of it. Rabbi Abahu pointed out a contradiction. Not really a contradiction, but two different ways where David expresses the same idea. Siv. Now you have the Shira of David, which is Kapitel Yud Ches of Tilim. It's also in Shmuel Beis, Perek Chav Beis. And so it's the same song, but there's a bunch of differences between them. And one of those differences is that Ksiv, the one in Sefer Shmuel, says, Vatazreni Chaya Lamachama. Literally, it means you girded me with strength for war. Girded, like when a person puts on the belt and strengthens themselves. But the word is Vatazreni without the Aleph. Uchtiv Hamazreni Chaya Lamachama. Or Vatazreni is with the Lashon. Until it's Vata Azreni with an Aleph. So why in one place is it written without the Aleph, which then it comes out not so much Meloshin Azer, which means a belt, but rather Meloshin Zora, which means winnowing, sifting out. And then the other one is Vata Azreni, which is with an Aleph. It means Omer David Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It means David is thanking Hashem. He says, Ribono Shel Olam, Zerisoni v'Zirastoni. You winnowed me out, and you winnowed me out again, and you clarified and made me even purer and even stronger. Or Rabbeinu Chananel says, Zerastoni, Meloshin Zoriz. You Zerisoni, you winnowed out and picked out Davka, the best part of the Shichvas Zera that I should be formed from, so that I have the capabilities that I do, and the Zera's Tani, and you made me a Zoriz in that way. So in the same way over here, according to that, Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchi is referring over here when he says Zered Ima Ololagag. So he's using, in other words, it actually says the word Zered means a bundle of reeds which grow very fast. So in other words, he's saying like a bundle of reeds where you put it down on the ground and it grows very fast and reaches towards the roof, the same way I was created to begin with in such a way that I was able to grow and become very large and very physically powerful. Okay. More about Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis. Omru olav Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis. Pam achas sipir dvorim im arvi echad bashuk. One time, and Rashi explains it was on Yom Kippur, he went and talked with a certain Arab in the marketplace. Now, what's it? Now there is actually a different version of the story that it was actually on Erev Yom Kippur, but that one's a little harder to understand because in that case, then, if he becomes Tomei, he could easily Tovel. and still be ready to do the avodah on Yom Kippur. So, which is why Rashi says over here that it was actually on Yom Kippur itself. Anyway, so what's he doing on Yom Kippur itself, going and talking with an Arab in the marketplace? So there is there's a different version of the story, I think in the Yerushalmi or something, that says that it was an Arab king. So in that case, the guy shows up on Yom Kippur. You have no choice. You have to go and talk to him. You can't tell such a person, "I'm sorry, I'm busy with the avodah today. Come back tomorrow." So he went out to talk with this guy. The nitzan sinurim with pival begodav. As they were talking, a drop of spit flew out of the goy's mouth onto Rabbi Shmuel's clothing. Now, midrabanan, all goyim are considered zavim. Therefore, the result is that Rabbi Shmuel is tamei midrabanan, and he's not going to be able to do the in effect, he's carrying the spittle on him, and therefore he can't. Therefore, he can't continue to serve as Kohen Gadol. V'niches Yeshev of Achiv, so his brother Yeshev of went in, v'shimesh tachtav, and served instead of him as Kohen Gadol on that day. V'rosa im, and shnei Kohenim Gdolim b'yem echad. So their mother got to see two Kohenim Gdolim, two of her sons, be Kohen Gadol on one day, because Yishmael had done the avodah the first half of the day, and then Yeshev of took over. The Shuv Amru Olivar Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis. Then they also said about the same Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchis. Pam Achas Yotze V'Siperim Hegman Echad B'Shuv. Another time also he went out and was talking with a certain governor, with a different governor, or Odin is a different Girsa. Anyway, B'Shuv in the marketplace, again a goy. Same problem. A drop of saliva landed from the other guy's mouth on Yishmael, on Rishmol's clothes. So he couldn't do the avodah anymore. V'nichnas Yosef Achim b'shimish tachdav. So this time his brother Yosef went and served instead of him. V'rasa iman shnei kohenim gadolim b'yem echad. So their mother again had the nachas of seeing two of her sons serve as kohen gadol on the same day. So in further on this, Tana Rabbanan shiva bonim hayu lo kimchis. This kimchis had seven sons. V'kulan shimshu b'kohen gadolah. All of them served in the kohen gadolah at one time or another. Now, we don't mean, Tosfos Hashanim says, that any of them passed away and then a brother of theirs had to take over, because the Gemara is going to explain that this was a tremendous shvach to her. This was a very great thing that she had this unusual schus. And if it involved her children dying, then obviously it wouldn't be much of a schus. So rather, what we mean is there were different examples like this, where one of them became tomei and the other one had to take over, or maybe one of them got old and retired and the other one took over. Whatever it is, the point is, in her lifetime, she got at one time or another to see all seven of them serving as kohenim gadolim. Marsha, by the way, talks about, he mentions, you know, earlier in the Masechta on that test, we had a list of the kohenim gadolim who served for more than 1 year. We said most in Second Beis Mikdash, most of the kohenim gadolim served for only 1 year, and then they weren't roy and they died in the Kodesh HaKadoshim or whatever. Here, the implication seems to be that this Yishmael ben Kimchis served for many years, because you have different years when 1 year Yeshevav took over and another time Yosef took over. So he says that Yishmael ben Kimchis over here might be the same as Yishmael ben Piavi that we said over there, who served for 10 years, who was one of the good Kohenim Gdolim of the Second Beis Mikdash. So in that case, Piavi would have been his father's name, and Kimchis would have been his mother's name. Here we're talking about his mother's name, Kimchis, on the grounds that as the Gemara is going to say, the schus, the whole thing happened, that all of them became Kohenim Gdolim, was because of her exceptional schus. So therefore, we attribute it to her over here by naming them after her. There is an interesting discussion that historians have. I mean, how comes it that punkt every time you have a different brother of his takes over? Why is it one time Yeshevav and another time Yosef? I mean, and there's a couple of suggestions. Reuven Margolius has an interesting suggestion, which is that he says Yishmael Davka wanted it that way. Because it's one thing, he says, if one of his brothers takes over one time, then okay, you know, it doesn't mean that he's resigned the office of Kohen Gadol. It means that, remember, the Kohen Gadol doesn't necessarily do the avodah the rest of the year. He could, but he doesn't have to. So if he steps aside one Yom Kippur because he's Tomei and one of his brothers takes over, fine. But if the same thing happens the next Yom Kippur and the same brother takes over, then that's going to be tantamount to him resigning the Kohen Gadolah, and he doesn't want to do that. So therefore, he himself would insist that it should be a different brother the next time rather than the same one. Okay. So Tanarabon and Shiva Bonim Hoyulakim. Kimchas had seven sons, but Kulan Shimshu, Kohen Gdola, all of them ended up serving as Kohen Gdolim while she was alive. So the Chachamim asked her, what did you do? What special mitzvah did you do that you were zoicha to such an unusual thing? So she tells them, never in my life did the beams of my house see the braids of my hair. In other words, she always kept her hair covered, even when she was inside the house and even when she was alone. Tosfos Hashanim says when she was able to cover it. I mean, you might have time, for example, when she's bathing and she can't, but as much as possible, she kept her hair covered even when she's in the privacy of her house. So the Chum answered her, Habe also Kane, Veloy Ha'ilu. It must be something more than that, because after all, many other people did that, and that didn't help them to have such an unusual schus. So there must be something else. So not that they're saying that it wasn't in the source of that, but they're saying there must be another factor as well. Rashi brings from the Yerushalmi, which tells the story also, and says that actually the Chachamim did accept that that was the reason, or at least a major reason. And they quoted in that connection the pasuk Kol Kvudah Bas Melech Pnima Mimishbetes Zahav Levusha from Kapitel Mem Hei of Tilim. That Kol Kvudah Bas Melech Pnima, the woman, a Jewish woman who acts like a Bas Melech, like a princess, and keeps her covered inside and doesn't allow and doesn't uncover her hair. Or the Yerushalmi also mentions a Loshen Loiro Imrei Chaluki, like the inside of my house, the walls of my house never saw the hems of my undergarments. Anyway, so somebody like that who acts in a sneeristic way, Mimishbetes Zahav Levusha, she's Roy, that from her will come a Kohen Gadol who wears clothes that have squares of gold on them, the Choshen and the Ephod. So therefore, so according to that, the Chachamim did in fact accept that that was the reason why she had this unusual schus. The Rebbe shteltzich on this a couple of times. There were times in the early years when the Rebbe was strongly pushing the point that women have to be careful about covering their hair and that they have to wear a sheitel rather than a tichel, because a tichel is more likely, they're more likely to get embarrassed and take it off in public. And the Rebbe used to quote this Gemara several times, that we see that in the schus of this unusual tznius that she had, which was more than, it's not required apidin. Apidin, you know, she's in the privacy of her house. Technically, even she's around her family, maybe she'd be able to uncover her hair. But certainly when she's all by herself in the house, she'd be able to, but she didn't, because of this feeling that Hashem is always watching her. And therefore, the result of that unusual sneers of hers was that she had such great children. So the Rebbe says, obviously, you know, we don't have Kohenim Gdolim nowadays, but you can still have that. A couple could have children that are of the caliber to be Beruchnius, what a Kohen Gadol should be, and therefore that, you know, and therefore it's up to the mother to be doing the right thing and make sure to act in a sneeristic way, and therefore to be zoicha for that. And another time that I've been talking about the idea also, when you think about it, hair is not even part of the body itself. It's only esatofel, I'm sorry. It's only something, it's only an outgrowth of the body. And still we're saying how important covering it is that it had such results. Okay. Going back now to the matter of the, so we digress to this because we were talking about rather small unusually large hands where he was able to take
Alexander
a handful of Totus. What?
I'm sure there were many, many more women or many other women who were as sneers as Ben Kimchi's mother.
That's essentially what the Gemara is saying over here, that the Chachamim told her, Harbe also came, Bloy Ilu, many other women did what you did and it didn't help them. So in other words, the Chachamim are saying there must be another factor. One idea is, some of the Mepharshim say, I think the Meiri says, okay, so what they're telling her is, it doesn't depend only on schus, there's also a certain degree of mazel involved, meaning that it's min hashamayim, who's going to be paid back like that in this world, versus who's going to be paid back in this way, in other ways, and in Olam Haba. Okay. Getting back now to the matter of the Koinets. Tonen Abonim, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says Bekumtzoi, when the Pasuk says, and now what it is so actually, so here with the Torahs, we're not dealing with a koimetz. We're dealing with chafina. The difference is a koimetz involves taking one handful of the mincha. Chafina involves taking a double handful. But the Gemara now, for now, in the next blot and a half or so, is going to deal with them a little bit interchangeably because the dinim are very similar. The Torah is telling you to use your hands to take a certain measure of something, a koimetz from the mincha, or a double handful of Torahs. So first, let's talk about the mincha. Tana Rabbanan, Bekumtzoi, when the Pasuk says that the Kohen should take from the mincha with his hand, that means Shelo Yasim Midol HaKoimetz, means he should not make a measurement for the Koimetz. In other words, don't go figure out how much fits in your hand, then go get a spoon made of that size, and then use that to scoop out the Koimetz from the mincha. No, you have to use your actual bare hand. Tosfos Hashanim explains somewhat differently that it means that you shouldn't think that you can take the amount that would fit in your hand, put only that in the keli, and then you're going to go scoop it out with your hand. No, you have to have the whole mincha over there. Okay, so iboylehu ma'ushi yasim midol hachafina. So what about then? Is the same true as far as chafina? Would we say the same thing that when it comes to chafina? Would we say that also he can't make, he can't previously have a spoon made to that size, and then he's going to use that spoon to, and then he's going to use that spoon to take the ktertus? Do we say now over there it says the word bekumtzoi, so the Torah is insisting that he uses bare hand. Here it doesn't say that he needs to take bechofnav, it just says he needs to take meloichofnav, the amount that fits in his cupped hands. So maybe therefore that should be fine to make a spoon of that size. And take the tortoise out of the original container that way. Here the expression is that he should take a double handful of ktoras samim, of a fine ktoras samim. So it doesn't say that he has to actually take it in his hands. Loi. So maybe not. Maybe he can take it out of the original container with a spoon. Maybe we learn exeter shava on the word maloi, where there it says maloi kumtsai and here it says maloi chofnav. So therefore we learn that yes, he has to use his hands to measure it out. So Tashma, let's prove from our Mishnah. We said v'chach hoisa midasa. That was its measurement. Now, what does that mean? L'chorda, those words mean my lab she'im rotz alasas mida acheras oisa. On the face of it, v'chach hoisa midasa means that's its measurement. That if he wants to make a measurement for the chafina, then he can do it. And if he has larger hands, then a larger spoon will be made. And if he has smaller hands, then a smaller spoon will be made. But and we'll do it that way. So that would mean, in other words, that that he could have a spoon made of that size, and he'll use that to begin with to scoop the tortoise out of the container and carry it into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he never needs to use his hands at all, except to originally measure the amount that's going to go into the spoon before they make the spoon, to measure how large it's going to be. The Gemara says, "Loi, not necessarily." The Mishnah might mean lifnin. The Mishnah may mean this is the same amount that he has to have in his cupped hands when he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Because we're saying, in other words, he starts by scooping out the tortoise with his hands, then he pours it into the cup, into the bowl, into the spoon, then he takes the spoon into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then he has to get the tortoise from the spoon back into his hands, and it has to be the same amount as before. The Gemara says, "Shamach minoch choifin v'choize v'choifin." Does that mean that, in fact, we learn from that that's how it is? That first he takes the tortoise in his hands, and later on the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he needs to have it in his hands again. And that's not so simple. We're going to talk about on Daf Mem Tes that there's actually a machlokas about that, or a question in the Gemara about that. So we don't use on Mishnah as proof one way or the other. The answer is no, because Dilma Shim Rotzalasis Mida Oise. No, because after all, you could still understand our Mishnah that way, that it means that he can have, before Yom Kippur, have them measure how much fits in his hands and then make a spoon of that size, and he'll use that spoon on Yom Kippur to scoop up the tortoise. In other words, the Mishnah is not being clear with the words of Chach Hoise Midasa, so you could understand it either way. Inami Shalayasa Velayose. Or it could be the Mishnah just wants to tell us that, in other words, the point is it has to be exactly Maloy Chafnav, no more and no less. Tosfos points out, now we're not saying that what it means is that the spoon itself that he carries the Ketores in to the Kodesh HaKadoshim is exactly the size of his hands. In other words, that every year they'd measure the Kohen Gadol's hands and then make a spoon to that size. Because Tosfos says, adarabe, it's better for the spoon to be slightly larger. That way there's less chance that any of it is going to spill out when he's transferring it back to his hands. So we can assume that the spoon was a little larger than it needed to be, the spoon that he carries it into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with. So therefore, we're talking about over here, can there be a spoon that holds exactly as much as his hands, which that he'll scoop out the tortoise to begin with to start the process? And the Gemara is saying, no, not necessarily. But on the other hand, maybe it also means, maybe it means instead that it has to be exactly the amount, no more, no less. So we can't prove from our Mishnah one way or the other. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Maloi Kumtza. Now again, let's go back to the Kumtza of the Mincha and talk about that. And then we're going to get back from that to Ketores. When the Pasuk says Maloi Kumtza, when the Pasuk says that the Kohen should take a full handful of the Mincha, Yochum Voidot, you would think that means that there should be pieces of flour and sticking out on every side. Therefore, the pasuk says in his hand, meaning that it has to be inside his hand, not sticking out. Now, though, if we're using the word bekumtzai, then maybe that means that even he can use just the ends of his fingers. So, in other words, like this, a real koimetz is supposed to be, as we're going to say, that his fingers cover the palm of his hand. But how do you know? Maybe it just means that in the tips of it, he just bends over the tips of his fingers. To the roots of the fingers, approximately, and the koimetz is just over there. No, tamad lama maloy kumtzai. Therefore, the pasuk says it has to be a full handful, kidakamtzi inchi, which means it has to be like people normally take a handful, ha ketzad. So, what does that mean? Chayfesh sholosh etzbois, al pisas yaday, he bends over three fingers over the palm of his hand, the koimetz, and that's how he takes the kmitza. The Rambam actually doesn't mention the matter of three fingers. The Rambam actually learns that he uses four fingers, everything except for the thumb. And one thing is, he may have had different gears over here, but second of all, also the Gemara is going to mention later that a statement of Rapapa, that kidkamtzi inchi, that a koimetz is done the way people normally take a handful of something. And when people normally take a handful of something, it's with all four fingers. So the Rambam may have understood that disagrees with this Braisa over here, and therefore that the halacha would be like that. Okay, so that's how you do this. That's how you do the kmitza. Over machvas over marcheshes. Now, when it comes to a mincha soilus, where the mincha is just made out of flour and oil, then it's very simple, because then if you have anything sticking out, then it's easy. You can just shake your hand or bang it against something, and anything extra, anything that's not inside the koimetz will fall out. But what about, you also have minchas machvas and minchas marcheshes, which are menachos that are fried in various ways. So those, they're actually describes, they're baked, and they're baked and then they're fried, and then they're broken up into large pieces. So there, it's much harder to take a koimetz, which will be exactly as much as fits inside the palm with the fingers covering it, because you're going to have pieces sticking out on the sides. So therefore, moichik begudle milamilo over etzboi ketana milamata. Therefore, he has to break off the extra with his thumb on one side and with his pinky on the other side. Vizuhi avoida kosha shav mikdash. This is a very difficult. This is the most difficult avoida in the bais mikdash. Tosfos actually points out, as machloikas in the Gemara Menachos, how you do it. Is it that these minchas machvas and minchas marcheshes, do you just break them up into four large pieces and then you take a kmitz out of that? In that case, then yeah, what the Gemara is saying over here is correct, that it's very, very hard then to use your finger, to use your thumb, to rub your thumb against it and to rub your little finger against it and break off those extra pieces that are sticking out. But you have another opinion in Menachos over there, that what you do is actually after the mincha is baked and fried, then you break it up back into tiny pieces, approximately the same size as the grains of flour that it was baked from originally. In that case, then taking a koimetz from a minchas machvas or minchas macheshes is not going to be any more difficult than from a minchas solus. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara says, Zuhi v'tuloi. You're telling me this is the only hard avoda in the Mishnah. Ro'ika malika. What about Yaham malika? Is also a very difficult avoda. Either because it's very hard to use your fingernail to cut through the bird's neck, or because you're holding the bird in such a way that you're holding it in the same hand where you're doing the malika, and it's very difficult to do that. And vahika chafina, and you have chafina, which we're going to say later, again, when the Kohen Gadol has to transfer the ketores from the spoon back into his hands, then that's a very difficult maneuver to do. So you're right. Ela zuhi may avodas koshas from mikdash. You're right. We don't mean that removing the extra part of the koimetz, using your thumb and using your pinky, is the hardest avoda in the Beis Mikdash, but it's one of the hardest. Okay. Amr Rabbi Yechon, boy Rabbi Yeshua ben Uzzah. Rabbi Yeshua ben Uzzah asked the following question. We're saying that when you take a koimetz of a mincha, so we're saying you can't have it sticking out on all sides. We're saying that you have only what's inside the hand is considered part of the koimetz. So now the question is, ben habenayim shomaloi kumtzei mahu. What happens, what goes in between the fingers? When you put your fingers into the flour, and when you put your hand into the flour to take the koimetz, you're going to end up usually with some flour between the fingers. What's the din of that flour? Is it considered part of the koimetz or not? Amar Papa. So the Papa says, let's analyze the question. Digavoi, whatever's inside, in other words, whatever is when you have your fingers cupped over your hand like that, then you're gonna have the fingers being woundish. Then you're gonna have a part that's on the inside of the space between your fingers. You're gonna have a part that's on the outside of the space, and then you're gonna have the part that's in the space itself. So the Papa says, Digavoi, what's on the inside, loyti boilach? There's no question, divade koimetsu. That's definitely part of the koimetz. Digavoi, what's on the outside, what's visible. So Tosfos is trying to explain. What's on the inside means what you would see from the inside. If you look into the Kohen Gadol's into the Kohen's hand, whatever you see from that vantage point would be lifnim. And whatever you see from the outside would be deboroi, would be what's on the outside, loiti boiloch. Also, there's no question, devade shirayim. That part is definitely shirayim, that part is definitely not part of the koimetz. Kiti boiloch de bene bene. So now the question is, only on the part that's in between, the part that's exactly between the fingers. Mai, so what would be the din? Amar Rabbi Yechanan, so Rabbi Yechanan says, now Rabbi Yeshua ben Uzzah had the question, Hader Pashta, Yeshua ben Uzzah ended up answering the question, Beina Beinayim Safik Ninu, that in fact, this part, Beina Beinayim, is in fact a Safik. Now, what do you mean? What kind of an answer is that? He started with saying that it's a Safik, Tosfos and Tosfos Yishonim Asa. So they answer that what it means is, originally, So Tosfos answers, originally Rabbi Yeshua ben Uzzah figured that it might be an answer that he wanted to know. Either it might be part of the koimetz or it might be part of the shirayim. And now the answer is, the fact is, it's a suffix. We don't know, like this, he thought, in other words, that we would have been able to conclude that it's one or the other. And now the answer is, we can't. We have to conclude that it's one of those things nobody is ever going to be able to figure it out. The Ritva compares it a little bit to Bein HaShemoshes. We know that there's a certain part of Bein HaShemoshes which is technically still considered day, and a part which is already considered night, but we can't tell which is which, which is why we're machmir on it when it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov. So in the same vein over here, at first he thought it might be definitely one, it might be definitely the other, and now he's saying, no, it's like Bein HaShemoshes, and it's doubtful which one it is. Also, Tosfos explains in a Nafgamina, if you say that there's a third possibility, really, besides that it could be koimetz or shirayim, it could be tevel. The same way as we say with produce, before you take truma and maize from it, it's tevel. You're not allowed to eat it. A mincha before the koimetz is taken is, in effect, tevel, and then you're not allowed to eat it. So the question was first, maybe the part of the koimetz that's between his fingers is koimetz, maybe it's shirayim, and maybe a third possibility is that it's tevel. And the answer is, no, it's not tevel, it's a suffix. What's the nafkamina, whether it's tevel or suffix? Tosfos explains, if it's tevel, then what happens if it gets mixed into other food, then it would aser it. Because tevel is asers other things, b'chol shehu. We call it not kosher, but in a much larger amount because it's davish yesh lamatirin, because you could take the koimetz from it and make it not tefil. On the other hand, if we say that it's a suffix, then fine, it can be bottle like other things that are a suffix. Okay. So the question is, heichi ovid. So practically speaking, what do? You have this flower that was between the kohen's hands. We can't offer it as part of the Torah. We're not sure whether it's part of the koimetz. We're not sure it's part of the shirayim. What should we do with it? Rav Chanina says, makdir koimetz l'chodei tchila. What you should do is first offer the koimetz by itself, v'hodir bein abinayim, then offer this part separately on the mizbeach that was between his fingers. And the reason you have to do it in that direction, in that order, the i'amit beina beinayim bereisha, because if you first offer the part that was beina beinayim, dilma shirayim ninu, maybe that's not considered part of the koimetz, maybe that's part of the shirayim, and if you offer it on the mizbeach first, v'havelu shirayim shechosru bein kmitza laktara, then the result is that the shirayim are going to be lacking something between the kmitza and the burning of the koimetz. And v'omam mar, and we learn in a gemara in Menachos, Shirayim shechosru ben kmitza laktara, that if the shirayim are lacking something, if some of it was lost, was spilled or whatever, between the kmitza and the burning of the koimetz, ein maktirin alein as a koimetz. You cannot offer the koimetz on its behalf. Actually, Tosfos says, there's actually machlokas Reb Yochanan and Rish Lakish on that. Rish Lakish says it means you can't actually offer the koimetz in that case if something is missing of the shirayim. Reb Yochanan says that you could offer it, you just can't eat the mincha. But either way, it amounts to the same thing. In other words, we want to have this mincha should be eaten. So therefore, you can't do it in that order. So therefore, necessarily, you have to first burn the koimetz. Now, all the shirayim are left, including this beina beinayim, which might have been part of the shirayim. And then afterwards, you burn them because they might have been part of the koimetz. So the question is, if you're going to say like that, that this beina beinayim may be part of the shirayim, hashtanami, then even now also, after you offer the koimetz on the mizbeach, you have a problem, because we can apply over here what it says in the pasuk, kol shemenu le'ishim harei b'val taktiru. Like this, the pasuk says, ki chol sa'or v'chol dvash, loy saktiru mimenu isha la'ashem, but we also learn from that, besides that it means the simple meaning, that it means you're not allowed to offer sa'ur or honey on them as chometz or honey on them as be'ach, we also learn from that that any part of a korban that is supposed to be eaten is not to be offered on them as be'ach. So over here, you have a suffix on this bein abinayim. It might be part of the koimetz, and therefore you have to burn it on the mizbeach. It might be part of the edible part, the shirayim, and therefore you have to eat it. So how can we say offer it on the mizbeach? What if it's part of the shirayim? Then you're going to be over on that lav. The answer is Amr Rabbi Yehuda Breidir of Shimon Pazi demak leleshum etzim k'Rabbi Eliezer. What you do is you follow Rabbi Eliezer's opinion and offer it on the mizbeach, and you make a tnai. If this really is part of the koimetz, then good. Then I'm bringing it as part of the koimetz, and if not, then I'm bringing it as firewood. The Tanya, we learn in a brayser, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, when the posuk says over there, it says that you're not allowed to bring these things on the mizbeach l'reyach nichoyach. For example, sa'ur and dvash, it says you're not allowed to bring them l'reyach nichoyach. Meaning, he says it's a mute, l'reyach nichoyach iatamala. You can't offer such things on the mizbeach as reyach nichoyach, as the korban itself. But you're allowed to offer them where you're having in mind that they're as if they were firewood. Rashi brings from the Gemara and Zvachim, the original machloikas was, what happened if you have pieces of chatos that are mixed up with pieces of oila? Now, pieces of oila have to be burned on the mizbeach. Pieces of chatos are supposed to be eaten by the kohenim. So what are you supposed to do with these? So Rabbi Eliezer says, what you do is you offer them on the mizbeach with a tnai. If these are, in fact, from an oila, then good, we're burning them on the mizbeach like we're supposed to. And if not, then we're burning them as if they were firewood. Because even though it's meat of a chatas and the kohenim are supposed to eat it, but in this case, we can do it having in mind as if it was firewood. So therefore, in the same way over here, we can do the same thing with this beina beinayim, this part over here that we have a suffix, whether it's part of the shirayim or not. So we burn it on the mizbeach l'shem etzim. So the question is, hanichal Rabbi Eliezer. That works out nicely according to Rabbi Eliezer. Elo rabbanon ma'ikal meimer. What about according to the chachamim? According to them, they don't allow that dispensation. In the case of the Bsar Chathas and Bsar Oila, they would say you can't do that. You just have to leave them till they become posel by Lina and then burn them. So according to them, there's no such thing as you can burn something on the Mizbeach that would otherwise be posel and do it L'Shem Eitzim. So what do you do according to them? Amar Mari de Kamti Shmeni. So the Mari says the answer is according to the Chachamim, there's no alternative. You have to have Dafka fat Koyanim, whose fingers are pressed together tightly, would have to be the ones to take the Koyanim. That way, if you have, you're right. If you have skinny Koyanim do it, then you're right. You could end up with Beina Binayim, and you're going to have a Suffolk. According to the Chachamim, you're going to have to begin with that only Koyanim who are fat are going to do Kmitza. So the Gemara says, Hashad Asis Lahachi. Okay, now that you reached that conclusion, Rabbi Eliezer Nami, Lachatchila de Kamsi Shmeini. Even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that Lachatchila, you should do it that way, because he's saying, but Yeved, fine, then we can offer it Lashem Eitzim. But even he doesn't agree that you should do such a thing, Lachatchila. So therefore, according to him, fat Koyanim would have to be doing the Kmitza. Now, the fact is, when the Rambam mentions these halachas about how you do Kmitza, he doesn't mention anything about fat Koyanim versus skinny ones. And after all, the Gemara is going to go on to mention over here that you have a question about the Beina Beinayim of the double handful of the Koyan Gadol. And obviously, not all Koyanim Gadolim were fat. So there's a couple of possibilities. One of them is that, in fact, skinny Koyanim maybe would have to press their fingers together very tightly to make sure there's no Beina Beinayim to have a Suffolk on. However, again, the Rambam doesn't bring that detail either. So some of them, Mefarshim explain that maybe the Rambam understands that, after all, the Gemara is bringing over this all according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Uzzah, but maybe Bechlal, that the question is only according to him, maybe according to everybody else, we don't even have to worry about it. As the Gemara is going to say, that Maloy Kumtze means Kedekamtze Inchi, means the way people normally take a Koymetz, and therefore that we don't have to worry about these Beina Binayim and things like that. We just do, a person takes a Koymetz the way they normally take the Koymetz, and we don't have to worry about these kinds of Sfeitas. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to bring a bunch of questions from Rav Papa. Some of them having to do more with the koymetz of the mincha, some of them having to do with the chafina, with the double handful of keteres on Yom Kippur. So beina benayim poshat or mochat to pause of v'chishev v'chafinas chaveres simen. This is a simen for a bunch of questions that our papa is going to ask, which are going to take us through the rest of this amud and throughout daf mem ches and onto the beginning of mem tes. The first one, boyer papa beina benayim shomoloi chafna mahu. What about the Beina Beinayim of the double handful of Torahs? We just said that there's a suffix about the Beina Beinayim of the Kmitza of a Mincha, the flower that's between his fingers. What about, in the same way, the flower between the Torahs between the Kohen Gadol's fingers? So what's the din about that? What's the question? Is Rav Papa asking whether we learn the Gzeira Shava on the word Maloy from Kmitza, which we discussed on Amud Aleph? Hainu hach. Then that's the same question we had before. That's the same question we asked before. Can you have a spoon made to the exact size of the Kohen Gadol's double handful and use that to scoop out the Torahs? And we said that would depend whether we have the Zeta Shava Maloy Maloy. Now you're asking the same question. So why ask the same question twice? The answer is no. No, rather, a Papa's question over here is as follows. Maloy chafna vehevi bein. And the question isn't on the Gzeder Shava. Even without the Gzeder Shava, you can ask like this. So when he brings it with his double handful, does it have to be Maloy chafna vehevi bein? And what's the important thing? Does it have to be his full double handful, which is what he brings in? And we require vahoyika, and therefore you have that because... And therefore you have that because right now you have his double handful includes this part Beina Beinayim, or Dom of a Lokach the Hevi Beinan, or maybe we have to focus on the word Velokach. The word Velokach means to take. So maybe you need Velokach the Hevi Beinan. Maybe you need that he takes. That he takes and brings in Vaholeka, and here the Beina Beinayim he didn't really take because he didn't intend for it to get in over there. So is it that whatever he picks up is considered part of the handful, and in that case it would include Beina Beinayim, or is it only what he intends to take, which does not include the part that goes between his fingers? So the Gemara says Teku, we can't be sure about that. Again, maybe it would mean that he has to be fat. Maybe it would mean he has to press his fingers very tightly together. And again, another possibility is the whole question is only according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Uzzah. Maybe we would say that according to everybody else, we're not worried about that. Another question, Amar Papa. Rav Papa says, now, as a background, pshitali meloy kumtze kedekamtze inchi. It's obvious to me that the word meloy kumtze, when it comes to the mincha, means that you take the komets the way people normally take a komets, which is, Rashi describes, that the normal way is you take the side of your hand, you take the pinky side of your hand, and dig with it into the flower, and then keep on putting the rest of the hand in, and eventually your hand is all inside the flower, and then you take the komets. So now, Boyura Papa, but a Papa asks, what about Kamatz Baroshets Ba'oisav Mahu? What about if he did Kmitza using his fingertips? Now, Tosfos explains, we said already on Amud Aleph that you can't use your fingertips, but they were just meant to bend over your fingertips just down to their roots. So you have a very tiny amount of space in there. Here, what we're talking about is, rather, if he did the Kmitza, it's going to hold a full Kmitz. It's going to be what's on the palm of his hand covered with his fingers. But instead of putting the side of his hand in, he puts in the tips of his fingers first. So Rashi describes, he has his, not the tips of his fingers first. Rashi describes, he has his palm downward. He sticks his fingers down into the flower, takes a Kmitz, and then fills it up that way. So rather than sticking in his hand from the side, he scoops, he has his hand face down and then pulls his fingers in. So would that work? Milamata lamaila mahu. What about also another possibility? What if he does it from the bottom up? Which means Rashi explains the other way around. He puts his hand on the flower, palm up, face up, and then uses his fingers to take the flower and scoop it up into his hand. Or what about minat sad mahu? What about if he does it? And what about if he does it from the side? Which means Rashi describes he presses his hand down. Again, his hand is face up. He presses it down onto the flower. So and that way allows the flower to flow onto his hand, and then he takes the kumets that way. So what would be the din mahu? What would be the din? What would be the din in that? Chafan bazur bazur, another question would be, what about if he does the chafina with one hand and then the other hand separately, the caravan zuitzu, and then after he has tortoise in each hand, then he puts the two hands together? So mahu, what would be the din with all of those? And the answer is teku. I skipped the line. I skipped a couple of lines actually. So minatz dodin mahu, and the answer is minatz dodin mahu. So again, what if he presses his hand down, face up, on top of the flower, and the flower flows into his hand from the side, spills over into his hand, would that be a valid kmitz? And the answer is teku. So in all those cases that I'm on paskins that you shouldn't do it that way, but if you did it that way, then the dieved, the kmitz, is acceptable. And Amar Papa, similarly to Papa says, pshitali, maloi chofna to the chafni, definitely the word maloi chofna means the way people usually take a double handful, which is they put their hands together, they cup their hands together, stick them into the ktertus, stick their, and take the ktertus that way. So again, boira papa, chofan barosha et ba'isa mahu. What about if he uses his fingertips to get the ktertus into his hands? So again, like Rashi describes, he puts his hands face down on the ktertus and then uses his fingers to scoop it into his hands. Or milamata lamaila mahu. What if he did it from the bottom to the top, where again he put his hand face up and then used his fingers to get the ktertus in? Or minatsad mahu. Or what about from the side, where he allows it to flow into his hands that way? Or chofen bazur bazur v'kerven zuitzu. Or he scooped separately with each hand and then put the two hands together. Mahu, what we're doing with those? And again, the answer with all of those is teku, that we're not sure. So again, he shouldn't do that. But if he did that, then b'di'evad that I'm on paskins, that it's fine and he can go ahead and offer that ktotus in the Kodesh HaKadoshim.